Oh, that's right. It's Monday afternoon. A week from tomorrow, people will be voting, and one of the offices you will be voting for in a primary election is the office of Lieutenant Governor. And today it is my great pleasure to introduce to you Mike Campbell. His dad, Carol Campbell, of course, was governor of South Carolina, and now he wants to be Lieutenant Governor. How are you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing great. I'm doing better now that I'm here with you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. So it's been a short race for you, really, hasn't it?
It has. This has basically been a 90-day venture for me this time around. I ran in 2006, that was basically a two-year process for me going through that. So this has definitely been drinking through a fire hose, so to speak. But we've been really pleased with the response we've gotten around the state and the people that we've gotten to see. And the great thing about this is you get to go and see so many old friends that you haven't seen in a while, but then at the same time make so many new friends along the way.
Absolutely. Now, why did you wait to get into the race?
Well, you know, I thought that Glenn McConnell, and let me kind of back up a little bit. As I say, when I ran in 2006, we won the primary, lost in the runoff. But one thing that process kind of demonstrated to me was that a lot of what we were saying was obviously resonating with a lot of people around the state. And at that time, one of the main things that I was advocating for was to have the governor and lieutenant governor run together on a ticket. And that was something, even after the race, I continued to advocate for, help push for, work with Governor Sanford on that, helping be a voice for it and lend my voice to restructuring and to kind of continue what Dad had started in 1993 as governor with state restructuring. And then most recently, worked with Nikki Haley and helping her be a voice to further restructuring for the state. But as we went through that process, I realized that there was still a lot to address. And people asked me 4 years ago to do this. The timing just wasn't right for me personally. I had just started a new business. I think my wife would have kicked me out of the house if I'd said, honey, I'm going to go do another race right now. One thing that I have really admired about our current Lieutenant Governor, Glenn McConnell, is the outstanding job that he's done with our aging population and the Office on Aging.
Like and that from a man who did not want to take that job.
That's exactly right. And, you know, he put his constitutional responsibility above self-preference, and I admire him for that. And, you know, he got in there, he got involved with that Office on Aging. Like myself, Glenn lost his mother to Alzheimer's. So this was really not a political decision once he got in there to get involved with the seniors' issues. It was a very personal decision, kind of like me while I'm running. I lost my father to Alzheimer's in 2005.
And he was young.
He was diagnosed when he was 59 and passed away at 65. When he was first diagnosed, my family and I got very active in the South Carolina Alzheimer's Association. And we wanted it to be more than just lending our name to it. It had to be something that really was going to help affect change for folks. And as we went through that process, like so many families that are going through that, my mom was going, she was a sole caregiver. And I saw the effect and the stress and strain and the toll that it was taking on her. And so we wanted to make sure that not only were we taking care of and looking after the patients, taking care of the sole caregivers, because so many times they become patients in the process themselves.
I think sometimes the thing that really is, the patient is always the patient.
That's right.
The caregiver, the people that are around, are the ones that really suffer, because sometimes the patient doesn't even realize what they're going through.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And, you know, I just heard a statistic just recently that 65% of all sole caregivers actually pass away before the patient. And that's the dramatic toll that it takes on these individuals. And so we need to do things to take steps and measures to take care of these individuals so that they don't become, like I say, a patient themselves. And, you know, it can happen just with any disease. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be Alzheimer's.
That's true.
It could be Parkinson's. It could be palsy. It could be any number of health-related issues that our seniors face.
Also special needs children that grow up.
Absolutely.
And become adults.
Right.
Yes.
That's exactly right. And so that was, you know, I one of the things that I was very proud of that we did help develop and participate in developing with the Alzheimer's Association was a thing called the Carol Campbell Respite Program, which basically allows for families that cannot financially afford to have somebody come in and give some in-home care relief so that that sole caregiver can go do something like going to the grocery store or just have some time to themselves.
Go to a movie.
Yeah, just some alone time to give them that break. And it does wonders in helping them keep their sanity and also keep their health. And so I've had the, you know, really as lieutenant governor, I mean, it always kind of tickles me that people that run for the office, they always promise you that they're going to do all these just wonderful, grand things as lieutenant governor. Oh, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to create 1 million jobs. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do it. Well, and that's great. You need to aspire to be able to do those things and get more out of the office. Having said that, though, really with the way the office is realistically set up, and this is why we pushed to have it restructured and campaigned to do that last time, but with the way it's set up, you realistically have two duties that you are constitutionally and legally bound to do. One is to preside over the state Senate as president of the state Senate, which from time to time you get to cast a tie-breaking vote, and you do get to rule things in and out of order on the Senate. So that's fair. That aspect's very important. But then the other side of that is the only other responsibility you really have, which to me is the more important responsibility, is to be the chief advocate for the seniors of our state and to help
under the Office of Aging.
Under the Office on Aging. And, you know, the Office on Aging was moved over to the Lieutenant Governor's office in 2006. It had previously been under Health and Human Services.
That's actually when Andre was Lieutenant
That's
Governor.
Correct. Yeah,
Andre
that's
Bauer.
It was moved over there. And, you know, when it first, I had some trepidation about that when it first was moved over there because I thought, well, you know.
Was that because of Andre or because of the office being moved over there?
No, not about Andre. Honestly, the reasoning that I was told that it was being moved, I had a real issue with that because at the time the justification for moving it was, well, the office is not being properly managed under Health and Human Services. Well, if it's not being properly managed, you fire the manager, you don't move the office. I was like, why is the Lieutenant Governor's office equipped to deal with these seniors' issues better equipped than Health and Human Services? Having said that, basically they've turned lemonade out of lemons because it's gotten over there and it's gotten its own identity.
Sure.
And it's not getting lost in the shuffle anymore.
Well, don't you think it's actually such a big part of our state now?
Absolutely.
We have so many retirees, so many baby boomers, that it really needs special attention separate from
No question. And as Lieutenant Governor McConnell so eloquently put it, we do have a gray tsunami heading our way for our state. And if we do not prepare for that, and so many of those senior issues are those health related issues. And not only is it the right thing to do to take care of these individuals from a humanistic standpoint, it's also the right thing to do for our state because, as everyone knows, our Medicaid and our Medicare system in this state and this country are already overburdened. And we need.
Absolutely. And when we come back, we're going to talk more about it. Hey, if you've got a question for Mike, give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984. We're here with Mike Campbell. He is running for the Lieutenant Governor's office.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here. Sharp Facets Gallery, how you doing this afternoon? Well, I just got the new updated bio for Mike Campbell. It seems like he's done a few things since this last bio that we have here, Mike.
Right.
You used to own Wendy's?
I did. We were actually, Dave Thomas was a good friend of ours. And
what about his daughter?
I've met Wendy a few times, but I don't know her that well. And believe it or not, Wendy used to live in Columbia, South Carolina.
For
years and years. She sure did.
How about that?
But she's a great lady, and that whole family, and we got to know them real well. Dave was very, he was adopted, and so he was very big into adoption programs. And when Dad was governor, he was the first governor in the United States to give special tax credits for state employees that adopted. So Dave came in, and they became fast buddies, and we got to know the family real well. And as a result, we ended up buying a Wendy's franchise and started out with one store and grew it to 19 and then sold them.
Do you still eat at Wendy's?
I do, as much as and you can't go wrong with a Frosty, a single, and a bowl of their chili.
Okay, well, there you go.
Without the finger in it. Remember the old finger incident that happened?
So, well, they certainly have expanded their repertoire since then.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I'm not so sure how much of what they've expanded the menu to these days that Dave would have really appreciated. He was always one of these folks, stick to what you know best and stick with that and do it well.
Well, being a businessman, I guess you understand that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I learned so much from that process of being in that business. And I've all of my adult life, I've been a small business guy and really never had any intention on, even though I've been around politics my whole life, I really never had any intention.
You didn't have any choice in that, did you?
Well, no. That one didn't come with an option. I learned a lot along the way and learned a lot about government along the way from a guy that I kind of consider one of the best leaders our state's ever produced. And that's why I kind of feel like I bring a unique perspective to running for lieutenant governor, because I'm not a career politician. I haven't run for a bunch of different offices, but I'm not a novice to government either. I feel like I bring that kind of businessman's outsider's perspective to government, but at the same time also know how to get things done within government and understand how it works and already have relationships, so there wouldn't really be any on-the-job training, so to speak, going through the process.
Well, what do you think the biggest thing from a business standpoint that is lacking here in South Carolina?
Well, obviously we can always do better at creating a better atmosphere for industry recruitment and economic development. But I will say this, whether people like Nikki Haley or not, one thing that is indisputable with Nikki, and that is she has done an outstanding job with industry recruitment and industry expansion of the industries that are already in the state. Having said that, that's kind of why I've wanted to focus a little bit more on the small businesses, because, our small businesses create approximately 7 out of 10 jobs of our state.
And we don't get tax credits.
No, that's right. Or the tax credits or the incentives.
No, but we don't get any of that. It's just, can you write the check in?
Exactly. And you do get, I mean, look, if you start a startup business, the deck's already stacked against you.
Absolutely.
Of being successful. You don't need government adding to that burden against your
paperwork.
Odds.
Well,
it's right. It's right. And it's all about streamlining the services. If we can, you shouldn't have to go to several different agencies to go through the permitting process if you want to start a business. You shouldn't have, there's so many things that we can streamline. Government's role as far as business goes is to help, should be to help create an atmosphere that is conducive to help business thrive and make it easier. Not they need to get out of the way. They don't need to be in the way. They need to.
That doesn't seem to be the philosophy, at least from Washington, which then trickles down to our state.
Well, and honestly, the reason is because you don't have enough small business people running the government. We have too many folks that have made their living off of the laws that they're up there making. And so I think we need more of a small business type attitude. And I think if you do that, so many politicians, when they run for office, they say it all the time. Oh, well, if we ran the government like you ran your business, your business would be bankrupt if you ran, like the government runs. So, but it is true. So many of these people have not, so many of the career bureaucrats have never been outside of the agencies that they work within. And then you have the people that are making the laws who have done nothing but benefit and profited from the laws that they're making. You know, where's the incentive for them to stop doing that? There's not.
Right.
So, you know, that's the reason I kind of, and that's one thing about my dad. You know, people ask me all the time, say, how was Carroll Campbell so successful in what he did? Well, there were two main reasons. One, he didn't put the party above what was right to do. And he understood that you could find common ground, regardless of whether you're Republican or Democrat, that you could find common ground to get things done.
Oh my God, that's a foreign concept.
I know. You know, think about this. When his first year in office, he issued 287 vetoes to a democratically controlled legislature. He was only the second Republican since Reconstruction to be in the office. Not one single of the vetoes was overridden. Now, and the reason being was because they knew they had that working relationship with him. And you know, it's unfortunate that we don't have that. So that was one of the reasons he was so successful. The other reason was he brought a small businessman's experience and attitude to the office. And that's something that I hope I can build on.
What do you think, just to go off subject here a little bit, what do you think about... people are always talking about, we got a lot of people that are running for the Senate and for the House and all this. Not here in our state, but on the big stage there. What
sure.
do you think? Do you think it's capable to pull back our national government, Washington, D.C.?
I think we have to.
Well, I think we have to, but can we?
Can we is another, and I tell you, you know, I hate to say this because it's a twofold, dual-edged sword. But you can't expect to pull that back if you keep reelecting the same people over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. That's just. But having said that, unfortunately, with the way the system is set up, if you don't continue to elect the same people over and over again, Washington's all about seniority.
Right.
And, you know, people wonder about how Strom Thurmond was able to do all these wonderful things for, you know, our state. Well, he had been there since Abraham Lincoln was president. And so that's why.
Nobody else could question.
Right. So he had the seniority and was able to get things done. And it takes many years to build that seniority up to get things done for your state. But I do think that we have to, you know, there's kind of a attitude around the country. People say, let's throw the bums out, but don't throw my bum out.
Right. Exactly.
And you know, we have to, in order for us for there to be a paradigm shift in our attitude and way we adjust our government, there's got to be more of electing a more cross-section of the people across the country, and there needs to be turnover. And, you know, it goes back to the old argument of term limits. I mean, are they good or are they bad? You can argue either point, because, yes, to fix the problem, you probably need term limits. The problem is, in the process, your state is going to suffer as a result of it.
Well, you know, one of the things that I wonder, Mike, is would it be better if we just moved and started over maybe in Nashville, Tennessee? Because I personally think that it has a life of its own. And I don't think it really matters, the 435 over here and the 100
right,
here.
Right.
But the bureaucracy of this whole, just look at the VA.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the inside the Beltway crowd lives in an entire world of you know, they do live in a bubble, and those people really think that the way they think is the real world, and they haven't a clue. And the problem is, so many of them get there and they don't leave the bubble to go out and go back to their districts or go back to their home states to keep in contact with those people. They think that the K Street lobbyists are the one is the way the rest of the world thinks, and that's not true. That's not reality.
That is true. I do think, on the flip side, with our House of Representatives up there, our congressmen, we have an awesome group.
We sure do. Particularly from this state,
yes,
we have some really jam-up guys. I mean, Jeff Duncan and Trey Gowdy and Joe Wilson and, you know, Mark Sanford's up there. I mean, Mick Mulvaney.
Tom Rice. What a guy Tom Rice is.
Absolutely. They're all, it's funny because they all have their specialty areas that you know, it's like anything else. They have strengths and weaknesses, but the strengths far outweigh the weaknesses in our delegation.
absolutely. Hey, I tell you what, we are right here. Time for South Carolina Radio News. We'll be right back. Don't you go away.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're here with Mike Campbell. He is the son of Carol Campbell, former governor. But unto yourself, Mike Campbell, you've gone out there doing a lot of things and been very involved in a lot of different businesses, a lot of different political avenues. Why don't you just give us a little rundown of what you have done out there in the world?
Well, we, as I say, I've been a small business guy my entire life. I've been in various types of small businesses, as you say. I was in the hamburger business for a while. I've done some stuff with some biotechnology. I'm still actually working with a company that does some biotechnology stuff for the Department of Homeland Defense and Homeland Security and Department of Defense. But I also have a little small business right now that we provide specialized tooling to stone fabricators. So I know a
That's
thing.
That's a very specialized business.
It really is, and I've learned more about rocks than I ever cared to. I've been involved with a host of things, but I understand that firsthand the challenges that a small business person goes through, how tough, difficult it is to make a payroll, how difficult it is to keep inventory on your shelves. I understand the tax structure and how that affects your businesses, all those kind of things. But I've also been involved, as I say, I'm very, very proud of our involvement with the Alzheimer's Association. And I think that's kind of what prepared me more than anything, because the reason I'm running for this office is for our seniors. And as I say, there are a lot of things I want to use the bully pulpit of the office to advocate for, but the one thing where the buck stops with you as Lieutenant Governor is that Office on Aging. That is, it's not, there's not, you don't have to go to the governor to ask permission about it. You don't have to go to the General Assembly. Obviously help with funding for the, but there, that's where you can affect some change. As we were talking about, our senior population is growing leaps and bounds every year, and we're going to they're coming in from retirement from the north, and we have a lot of people from Florida that are now, that have retired in Florida, tired of dodging hurricanes, and are now moving to South Carolina. So this is going to be a very, very real issue that we need to be able to face. And I want to go and focus on other areas and talk about other areas as Lieutenant Governor, but the reality of the situation is that's the one area you can affect change for, and I can think of no better thing to affect change for than our seniors.
Absolutely. Now, you also have been involved in politics, though. Let's see. You were state chairman for Mike Huckabee.
I was in 2008. Very, very proud of my friend Mike, and who I'm very proud to say that I have his endorsement in this race.
Okay. And then, let's see, you were state co-chairman for Newt Gingrich and also for John Huntsman.
I was. And two other fantastic guys. But, yeah, I've stayed politically involved. I endorsed Nikki Haley when she ran last time. Nikki and I actually go back. I actually helped Nikki when she first ran for in 2004 when she ran for state representative. And so I probably, of us in the race, probably have the longest relationship with her than anybody does.
She's in a pickle, isn't she, as far as endorsing?
Sure. And she's not. It doesn't behoove her to go pick favorites one over the other because three of the four of us running for the office have a relationship with her.
A political relationship.
A relationship. That's right. Right. Yeah. 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 You can make that clarification, of course.
There you go.
She's a great lady and somebody I consider a friend, and I think she's doing an outstanding job. She, one thing that means a lot to our family is how often she refers to Dad as her role model of wanting to follow in his footsteps as pertaining to economic development and government restructuring, and that she's very gracious in doing so.
Yeah, and in fact, you go all the way back to Ronald Reagan, don't you?
I do. I do. I sure do. I can. And that was my. Probably my first presidential election I remember was in 1976. My dad was running for the state Senate. We lived just up the road here on a little farm in Fountain Inn, South Carolina. And as a fundraiser, Bob Dole came in for a barbecue. He was Gerald Ford's VP pick at the time. And that was the first presidential race that I actually remember. But then, when in 1980, when Ronald Reagan was running for president, the establishment here in South Carolina was all behind John Conley. Strom Thurmond and Jim Edwards and a lot of other great guys in the state had lined up behind John Conley. But my dad and another guy named Lee Atwater were the two guys that got behind Ronald Reagan, got behind him early. Mm-hmm. And dad was his state chairman. Really, South Carolina is what set up the firewall for Ronald Reagan to go on to become president, and also set up us being that race is what distinguished us as being the state that picks presidents, as we like to say in the party, because we didn't have a primary system in the state before that 80 race, and that was something that Dad had worked very hard on to help get for South Carolina. And I've grown up around government my whole life and seen it from all different levels, from the presidency on down. And so I feel like I just have a little unique perspective there to bring to it. But it's been fun, and I love this state. I grew up with an appreciation for it. I always felt like my dad used to tell me, he said, son, if you have the ability to give back and really make a difference, then, you need to. It's your responsibility. It's your duty to do. And that's what we're feeling like we're working on right now.
Absolutely. Well, Mike, you also want to protect the law enforcement who protect us. What do you mean by that?
Well, I served. I was Mark Sanford's vice chairman of the Department of Natural Resources Board for 8 years. As such, I also chaired their Law Enforcement Advisory Committee, which helped oversee the department, the division of law enforcement for the department. And so I worked very closely with them. I'm still a deputy officer with the department, and we went through a process of repeatedly having our budget cut and cutting not only where we were it was a manpower shortage, but also the assets that they needed to do their jobs were cut. And having some experience in overseeing one of our three state law enforcement agencies, I already had an appreciation going into this for law enforcement, but particularly as I saw this, and the more I've talked to law enforcement officers around the state and the various agencies, this isn't just a state-related problem. It's all the counties and city departments. And we have, unfortunately, situations where the budgets have been slashed so much for some of our local agencies. I know in the past where we've had agencies where officers who still get up, put that badge on, put that gun on, walk out that door, kiss their wife and their children goodbye. Obviously, in law enforcement, you don't know whether you're going to return at the end of the day. But in order to feed their families, they've had to go on food stamps. To me, that's inexcusable. These people, and it goes back to the very argument you were talking about just a minute ago with what's going on with the VA right now. It's the same premise in law enforcement, whether it's military or law enforcement. These are people that have sacrificed, have put their lives on the line for the protection of us so that we can enjoy the liberties we have as a society. And for us to not look after these individuals is absolutely inexcusable. And it burns me up anytime I hear anybody say, if only we had the money. Well, bull, we have the money. If you can take that money out of your pet project, out of your county, and properly allocate it where it needs to go, and take cut, there's still plenty of pork to be cut out in government. Sure. Then it can be properly allocated. So here again, what does that have to do with the lieutenant governor's office? Not much. But what you can do, you can be that voice and be their champion. And when I got in the race, I just didn't hear many people out there talking about law enforcement, not just within the lieutenant governor's race, any race.
Sure.
And I'm like, this is something, and plus it's something that I know a little something about. I'm like, okay, well, let's concentrate on, as I say, I can say I'm going to do all these wonderful things and be Merlin the magician with my magic wand, but the bottom line is, you know, you're limited in what you can do, but why not apply the experiences that you've had to be able to do things?
Sure, exactly. Now, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to talk about a couple more issues, and then at the top of the hour, I'll give him 2 minutes to tell him why you should vote for Mike Campbell next Tuesday. Hey, I'm Ann Eller. Give us a call if you got a question. 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Layaway. We've done it for over 30 years here at Sharp Facets Gallery. So whether it's Christmas, a birthday, an anniversary, or just because, we know layaway every day. Come see us today at Sharp Facets Gallery. Need more info? Call us 229-6613. That's 229-6613.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here, Sharp Facets Gallery, having a great conversation with Mike Campbell, and he is running for lieutenant governor. And I tell you what, Mike, you know, you just talked about the law enforcement issue, but I think you had another issue here too. You were concerned about education, and I tell you what, I've interviewed a lot of people running for superintendent of education.
Right.
What is the deal with you and education?
Well, education, obviously, I mean, it's important to all of us.
Sure.
I mean, and you know, the highest aspiration any parent or grandparent wants is for their child to have every opportunity afforded to them in life, get a good quality education, and then have a job to apply that to. And I don't think that should come at the expense of having to leave your home state in either regard. Education, particularly for me, is something that's important to me because my wife's a second grade teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I have two children. I have a son who just wrapped up the seventh grade, and I have a daughter who is in the fifth grade. Now, my son goes to school and attends school, but my daughter...
school?
No, he's in private school.
Private school, okay.
But he attends school, but my daughter's homeschooled.
Okay.
And...
why is that?
Because it's what works best for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids are a perfect example that one size does not fit all when it comes to education. He's in a classroom environment. He excels at that.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter's in a homeschool environment. She excels that way. It's not a one size fits all. So they're living examples of why, you know, the concept of Common Core just does not work. And then, as I say, with my wife's being a school teacher, and actually she stayed home this year to homeschool our daughter.
Will she continue at homeschool, or will she go back into
We don't know. I mean, it's really what she wants to do. I think at some point, yes, she'll probably return to a classroom.
Mm-hmm.
But if she wants to continue to be homeschooled, and that's what works best for her and best prepares her to take on the world, then, you know, that's exactly what we'll do.
Now, do you think the dollars ought to follow the child? This is a big debate with the superintendent. I know that's not really your issue here, but what do you feel?
I think that there should be certain credits that should be tax credits and things like that for folks that do decide to homeschool their children. And I also understand that not everybody is in the situation that they can homeschool their child.
Sure.
That's just, you know, it's not you're not going to have that all the time. Having said that, we've got to address the needs in our public education system, our public schools. And I will say this, I don't think that the problem in public schools is the budgeting. There's plenty of money there. It's just to properly allocate it.
Got any money there for roads? I just like to know.
Right.
For the roads out here.
Right. Well, exactly. And that's something that we've got to focus on is our state infrastructure and have the roads. But, you know, so many people say, well, we need more money. Well, we do need to pay our teachers more money than what we pay them. And I'm not just saying that because my wife's one of them. I'm saying
there's
that.
No self-interest there.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
But, no, there's, that is something we have to do, but really, the way, in my mind, the way that you are going to ever fix education in this state or in this country is it's got to be a societal shift that we have in our culture, whereas we can have the nicest facility in the world as a school, mm-hmm. the most state-of-the-art technology there, highest standards of curriculum, best paid teachers, best educated teachers, all that. But if that child's learning experience and educational experience ends at the end of the day when they pass through that door and they return into an environment that is not conducive of learning, that's not going to be supportive of learning, then you're never going to catch that child. And that's what we've got to, you know, we don't send our kids to school to be raised. We send them to be there to be educated. But being raised at home is being a part of their educational system, and it needs to have
that
support.
Probably one of the ones that's the hardest to solve, Mike.
It is. It absolutely is, and you know, it's that's not something that's going to obviously be solved overnight. Mm-hmm. I don't even know that it'll be solved in my lifetime. I hope it is.
Right.
But the issue is that's what we have to. That's if we ever really want to. And you know, people, we talk about the war on poverty. The best way to fix the war on poverty is to fix our public education system, because once you fix the schools and they're getting the good quality education, mm-hmm. then they will have that to be able to apply to a job. Now, it's up to us to help in the private sector and the entrepreneurs out there to continue to help create those jobs, but they need to have something to apply that education to, but that's the way you address poverty in this country.
Well, I think one of the most interesting philosophies that they're going back to is apprenticeships.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you know, something that has been around for hundreds of years but kind of dropped out is now coming back around as a great way to introduce young people into a job.
Absolutely.
for future life.
And I tell you, what we've gotten to the process of too much in our society today is dumbing down. We live in a society where everybody gets a trophy, just for competing. Well, that's not real life. That's not the way the real world works. And so we have to, you know, our kids, and their educational system, has to be one, that is going to, that is really going to benefit them later in their life.
Competition is a good thing?
Absolutely. And the fact that they're not competing with the kids sitting in the desk next to them. They're competing with the kids sitting at a desk in China.
Right.
And that's the global marketplace that we live in today. And we have to. And I never thought I would live in my lifetime. I never thought I would see where we're having a debate on whether to teach cursive.
Exactly.
In our schools. That is the most insane thing I've heard. I can't believe that we're even talking about that.
Well, good thing is, I think that in South Carolina, at least, we're still going to teach it.
We're going to continue. Yeah, and you know, it was funny. I was just talking to a lady the other day whose son had just received an invitation to a party that had been handwritten by a little boy, and it had been written out in cursive, and he couldn't read it.
Yeah, that's frightening, isn't it?
I don't know.
Where's the logic?
I guess logic. Don't confuse the facts with logic, or you know, whatever it is. But it's too bad. But we do have to address our educational problems. And here again, the lieutenant governor can't have a whole lot of say so in that. But you can use your voice in the office to try and push for these things.
Sure. Well, I know even through the aging grandparents and whatnot, they would like nothing better than
Absolutely.
To see that their grandchildren and great-grandchildren are educated and able to carry on so that they can work and they won't have to.
Right. No, that's right. That's right. That's exactly right. But, who better to have our youth spending time with than the seniors. They're so much that they still have to offer, not just educationally, but morally.
You're right. And we could use a dose of that.
Oh,
we?
Gosh, yeah. Our society is in a drought as far as that goes.
Exactly. Well, Mike Campbell, I know you want to be the next lieutenant governor. I know we have a primary coming up a week from tomorrow.
Absolutely. It's a week from tomorrow, and I want to encourage everybody, if you are not going to be available next week, go get an absentee ballot. Obviously, I want your vote, but it's more important that you participate in the process.
Yeah, we don't want a soft turnout.
No, we need, you know, each year it seems to be going down and going down even more. We need to make sure, you know, it's very simple. You can go, you can go on scgov. .org and find out information there, or you just go by your county registration office. Just drop by and you can vote. It just takes a few minutes, but it's very important that if you're not going to be available, of course I want you to vote for me. Absolutely.
And why should they? I'm going to give you 2 minutes. Why should they vote for you?
Well, as I say, I think I bring a unique perspective to the office that I don't think a lot of people offer that comes along every day. As I say, I still have that small businessman's outsider's mentality, but have the knowledge and the relationships within government to get things done. And not only that, the bottom line for me is the seniors of our state. I do want to focus on other areas like our small businesses, like our natural resources, law enforcement, education, things of that nature. Use the bully pulpit of the office to do so. But at the end of the day, the one thing that you can actually affect some change on is the Office on Aging, and that's where I have some experience. I'm not talking about, oh, well, let's, if I'm elected, I can work on these programs. These are things I already have experience working on. I was very proud just a week before last to be endorsed by 60 Plus, which is basically, it's a national seniors organization, which is basically the conservative version of AARP. And I'm the only individual in this race that's been endorsed by a national.
How old are you, Mike?
45.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just checking.
Right.
You're not 60.
No. I'm not 60. I don't have my card yet.
All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. You can go ahead for a minute here.
So, because of that perspective, and I tell people all the time, look, if the seniors of this state want somebody that's going to get up every single day and put their interests first and fight for them every day, then Mike Campbell's their guy.
Absolutely. Well, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. I tell you what, Mike Campbell, thanks so much for coming out.
Thank you for having me.
Good luck next week in the race.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. We're going to join the news in progress. I'll be back. I've got another interview, so don't you go away.